And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what up, folks? Welcome to episode 58 of our amazing podcast show called the Fanboy Garage. So happy to have you guys here. Yeah, putting on my podcasting voice. What's up, folks? Not too much energy?
Wow. I think I need a
hug. Sorry. What's up, guys? Glad that you guys can join us. Lots of things to discuss. There's been lots of movement, lots of industry news. But before we get into any of that, let's do our box office analysis.
Sure. As we start to wind down on the summer movie season, so it wasn't a particularly inspired week at the box office. Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw once again, number one, $25.2 million. That's almost a 58%, basically is a 58% drop from week one, which isn't, I guess it's not terrible for that type of movie and for that franchise, but considering the fact that, like I said last week, I wasn't blown away by the domestic number, one. You know, it's at $110 million now.
That's not good to me.
It's fine. Like I said, I mean, the movie is, you know, it doesn't open in China until August 23rd. Which is a huge market for these. It's been anyway, a huge market for the Fast and Furious movies.
Right.
So you would assume that alone. I mean, it's doing fine. It's $335 million worldwide right now. After two weeks.
It's made its money back, right? Off of a $200 million budget.
Well, it hasn't yet, but it will.
Yeah.
It should be somewhat profitable. It's just not a huge blockbuster or anything like that. But the big surprise this week was Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So if you remember last week, if you heard our show and our analysis, we talked about how the Dora movie was forecast to do like 28 million maybe this weekend. And Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was set to make about 11 million. Well, that was very wrong. So it shows you what those forecasts really mean. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, almost $21 million domestic. Good for second place. That's a movie that only cost $25 million to make.
That's huge, man.
Yeah.
Like, sure like that. The marketing, I've seen a trailer, maybe. But that's pretty much it. I don't remember seeing any large billboards, anything like that for the film. But hey, man, $25 million budget, making close to $21 million in your first weekend.
Yeah. The reviews were good, but the cinema score was like a C. So, you know, who knows what the legs on this thing are going to be. But either way, I mean, when you get off to a start like that and your movie only costs $25 million to make, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, even if it completely just plummets next week, it still should be fine for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Still surprising though.
Yeah. Also fine is The Lion King. Now it you know, it hasn't, it's funny, The Lion King, so it did another 20 million domestic and that was a 48% drop, but you know, the movie hasn't, I don't want to say it hasn't held up well because that's not accurate, but like it's dropped a little bit steeper every week than you would expect a movie like this to do, but it was so front loaded. I mean, that first week was so huge that it doesn't really matter. It's, you know, $473 million by the end of the weekend, heading towards, you know, well over $500 million. It's going to break the Beauty and the Beast record for biggest, you know, domestic live action remake, reinterpretation, whatever.
Yeah, they're just making up categories at this point.
Yeah. Towards $1.35 billion right now, so you know, obviously, can't complain about that at all.
Right.
Of course, Dora and the Lost City of Gold, as we discussed, come in well under expectations, $17.4 million. I mean, it's a movie that cost $49 million to make.
Right.
So I'm not really sure what their hopes were, but I'm going to assume that you know, they were hoping that it was going to open closer to the $28 million that it was forecast for, as opposed to the $17 million that it did. I don't really have a feel for that. The reviews were okay on it, so I'm not really sure what didn't click, but I don't know.
It's Dora.
I guess, yeah. It doesn't really.
Sure.
It's probably. I'm not really sure who the audience for that.
I mean, is that movie maybe like 5 to 8 years too late?
It could be.
I feel like Dora was like on a high.
Yeah, it could be.
Everyone was talking about Dora, and now it's like, nah.
Yeah.
They're gonna have to do like Storybots. Storybots movie next.
Sure.
Don't worry, that's that kid stuff that I'm totally steeped in. So. Anyways.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in its third week, another $11.6 million. It's over $100 million domestic. Now, the movie cost $90 million to make. So even though it's performing well, you know, especially by the standards of like Tarantino's movies, it's not quite a huge hit yet. You know, not with that budget anyway.
No.
Yeah. Although I'm looking,
but it's like what? It's ranked number 3 in his franchise library.
Right. I mean, that's based on pure box office. But again, right, when you take a look at budgets, that kind of changes things a little bit.
Yeah.
And then just other things that we would really care about: Spider-Man: Far From Home, another light drop, 33%, another $5.2 million. It's heading towards $1.1 billion. And it's at over $370 million domestic. Toy Story 4, once again, only a 38% drop, another $4.5 million. It's over $419 million domestic and over $990 million worldwide. So it's going to do $1 billion, which, you know. Good for Disney. We're going to be talking a lot about Disney
over
the course of this episode again. But, so that's basically it as far as the only stuff that matters. The season's winding down now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what what the expectations are for the Angry Birds movie 2, which is the wide release for this coming weekend. But Ron Diesel had asked us, you know, now that the summer movie season is coming to an end, basically, or winding down, what are our thoughts on the 2019 summer movie season compared to last year? Any big surprises or things that we kind of saw coming as it relates to the movies?
So last year felt like it started off really early. Because Avengers Infinity War, well, it's around the same time, so it's like April, right? So there was Infinity War, there was Deadpool 2.
Yep, Solo.
Solo, which we know how that...
Ocean's 8. Incredibles 2.
Right.
Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. Sicario 2. Oh, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible Fallout, Crazy Rich Asians, which, you know, became like a huge hit.
Right.
Just looking over summer 2018, summer 2018 was better.
It was definitely some better movies there.
Yeah.
It was like an urgency, you know, to see those films. This year, it was like Infinity War, Spider-Man, obviously Hobbs and Shaw for you, John Wick.
Well, yeah. I mean, so this year for me, 2018, it was really, it was a summer of surprises in the sense that, like, there were a lot of things that did either really well or just really poorly. There wasn't a lot. Four movies in theaters this summer. And the crazy thing about that is, you know, Avengers Endgame is considered a summer movie this year, even though it opened on April 26th, right?
Right, right.
And then exactly. John Wick Chapter 3, which is one of the other movies I saw, opened May 17th, which means June, July, and August, I saw two movies. Spider-Man Far From Home and Hobbs and Shaw. And that mm-hmm. is very unlike me. Usually in the summer, I would expect to see anywhere between like 6 to 8 movies, right? Mm. In the course of a summer movie season, especially now that they're considering the summer movie season, like essentially the end of April through the end of August.
Right.
And, you know, there were movies that opened like Godzilla, King of the Monsters that I was positive I was going to go see in theaters, you know, because I'm a huge mm-hmm. Godzilla fan, and didn't. Because by the time the movie came out, I just was like, I don't really feel like going to the theater to see it.
Right.
Even though I'm going to, I'll eventually see it. You know, movies like Dark Phoenix, which I had, you know, would have had on my list of movies that I would go see. But it just, the reviews were so bad and the word of mouth was so kind of not great on it that I just wound up not inspired to go see it.
Right.
You know, so like things like that that popped up. I don't know. It just overall, yeah, it just wasn't great. I mean, you know, but the summer to me it's not really the same anymore because now, you know, we're at a time period where like blockbusters are released almost all year round, right?
Right.
We've seen them now in February. We're seeing them in March, April. We're seeing them in, you know, even October right now is a thing. Right. I mean, September 6th is It Chapter 2, which is expected to do huge box office numbers. And I mean, that was, when did anything worthwhile ever come out in September?
I mean, that's the thing, right? So it's not even, I don't even know if it's the timing per se. It's just like where they're placing these films that have become so, culturally relevant, maybe, if that's what it is. And,
We know in the case of Black Panther, we know what that was, and we know Captain Marvel, what the point of that was, plus timing.
But, the thing is, these movies are totally dispelling the seasonality of blockbusters, right? Like,
sure.
It doesn't work anymore.
No, and something like It, so it was a surprise hit, right? It Chapter 1.
Yep.
Nobody expected what it did. Even somebody who was the most optimistic person about its box office potential couldn't have predicted, you know, what that movie wound up doing, right? So they're like sticking with the formula. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. And knowing that that kind of movie is the type of movie that is going to attract an audience regardless of when it's released. And releasing it outside of the thought process is the summer is still this huge crowded time, right? So releasing outside of that when it's not a kid's film, so you don't have to worry about kids being in school. You know, that's not a factor. So yeah, there's a whole lot of reasons for it. So yeah, I mean, I don't think the idea of like, I mean, the summer is still the summer, so you're still going to get a lot of your blockbuster type movies are going to come out in the summer and the holidays. I mean, the summer and the holidays are you know, at the end of the year are still something. There's something to them. But mm-hmm. the fact that you're getting things a little bit more spread out and the idea of like, you know, I mean, when I was younger, you never even thought about movies coming out in September and October because those were the afterthought movies. Those were the movies that weren't good enough to come out in the summer and weren't good enough to come out during like the holiday season and Oscar season. So that was where they just, you know, just like February, like January, February, March were the times, like those times were the times when they released the stuff that they didn't really have a lot of faith in.
Right.
Because they didn't, you know, they didn't fit into the two big times of the year. Well, that's not really a thing anymore. So I think, and that's a big part of it. You know,
So when we look at 2018, are you talking like the quality of films were better or because?
Well, as far as interest I already know, I saw a lot more movies in theaters in the summer of 2018 than I did this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. You know. Same.
I felt about the movies themselves, that I think the point is like, did it get me to the theater?
Yeah. And I have to strike that comment. I'm like, let me think about this because I did see Aladdin. I saw part of Lion King, Spider-Man, Avengers. Yeah, maybe it's like 4 movies I saw.
Which is the same as me. So it's just you swapped out. So, like, whereas I saw John Wick and Hobbs and Shaw,
Yeah, I saw the key stuff.
You saw Aladdin and the Lion King, but that makes sense because you have, you know, your daughter and yeah, I'm just one. Me and yeah, and we, you know, so obviously. Now, you may have gone to see Hobbs and Shaw and John Wick, you know, under different
yeah.
circumstances.
Oh, no, 100%. You know, yeah.
So you definitely have interest in those movies. You just didn't go, which is...
Oh, and I also saw Dumbo, but that wasn't much. So that wasn't
no.
Count.
And
yeah. What about Shazam?
No, because Shazam, I'm not. That came out in what,
like
April.
Early.
I wouldn't consider that in the summer movie
okay.
season.
Okay.
I don't even really like considering Endgame in there, to be honest with you. But I get it. Okay, we're gonna consider it yeah. that because it might as well have come out in May, which I guess counts still. So fine.
But, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I mean,
because
look, April 26th
films,
is not the summer, like... right? We know that, but it's considered
right.
part of the summer now, I guess.
Well, here's the other thing. So, like, 2018 for me, kind of looking back. Now, I saw Avengers. I saw Deadpool 2.
You saw
I did see Ant-Man in the... Did I see Ant-Man and the Wasp in the theater? Yeah. Yeah, I did see that. And Solo. So those were... four movies that I caught in theater. But I did see a lot of stuff in 2018. Like just in kind of like things that had dropped that I didn't get a chance to see. And I do feel like quality wise 2018 was probably better. There's a lot more exciting films that I was probably more drawn to. So like right now in 2019, I would say Hobbs and Shaw and John Wick are the only two that I'd say, I wish I could have caught those in the theater. And I still can, but there was a lot more on that list in 2018. So sure. Yeah, I'd say 2018 was probably better. 2018 was better than this year, despite how big.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it is because, like, if you look at some of the bigger movies, right? So Aladdin, Lion King, Toy Story 4. Now, I love the Toy Story movies. Mm-hmm. I will watch Toy Story 4 as soon as I get a chance, but I'm not gonna go to the theater to watch that. Like, you know. And I mean, I saw, you know, unless I'm with somebody else, like that's not a movie like where it's like a John Wick or a Hobbs and Shaw. If I need to, I can go by myself or whatever.
Yeah.
So like, that's a movie I would really love to see. I just haven't had a chance to see it yet. Lion King and Aladdin, it's not really, I don't know that I'm going to really make an effort to watch those, but those were huge movies. They just weren't, I wasn't the audience for those movies.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's just, I guess last year there was probably more movies that I was an actual, like I would be in the audience for, like, I mean, Incredibles 2, for instance, I loved that movie. I didn't see it in the theater, obviously for the same reasons.
Yes,
I didn't see Toy Story 4 in the theaters, but I saw it and loved it cause I love Pixar. I love the Incredibles. So yeah, sometimes it's just a matter of circumstance too. It's the types of movies that come out. I mean, cause mm-hmm. we're talking mm-hmm. specifically based on like our expectations. Although I don't, you know, were there any real surprises for you? Is Dark Phoenix tanking as bad as it tanked a surprise? I mean, I don't think any of us expected it to set the box office on fire, but I mean, I don't think anybody of us necessarily expected what it did either, right?
You know, I was sort of hopeful that it would, you know, beat expectations because I think people... Off the bat, even way, way, way before the movie was released, just kind of had it out for that movie.
Right.
And I was hoping that it would have just overperformed and really just smacked everybody in the face because it's an X-Men film and I wanted it to succeed. I mean, I'm a big advocate of the franchise. It's like one of my favorite comic, you know, comic stories and things like that, comic characters. So I really wanted it to do well. That said, I am very, very realistic and... Apocalypse left such a nasty taste in my mouth, and we've talked many, many, many episodes about this. But it wasn't for me. You know, I knew it after seeing the trailer and knowing that they were going to continue on with the characters after Apocalypse. It just kind of was like, yep, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah, but did you expect 200?
I did not.
60 million worldwide.
I didn't think
it
was
going to
be that bad.
Yeah, that. So that
that is horrendous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
the fact that it came and went, I mean, you would figure just based on the history of the franchise and the popularity of it and the fact that this is the last movie and that most, like, mainstream audiences that might be familiar with, you know, the X-Men movies, they don't really necessarily know, like, oh, this is the end of this and now Marvel owns it. You know what I mean? Like, that type of insider stuff. I mean, I guess more people now are in the know than they were before, but still, for the most part, the average moviegoer doesn't know any of those things and doesn't factor that into their decision necessarily to go see something. So this was just a complete failure on every level.
Yeah.
You know, Men in Black International, was that a surprise too that it did as poorly?
No, not to me. Not really. I mean, it just you know, again, I think Chris Hemsworth, Tessa Thompson, like that's all good, but do I think that those were the Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, you know, that I just didn't feel like it was going to work. Like the leads and just the rehashing of that franchise, I just didn't think it's necessary anymore.
Yeah, and just like on the positive side, like I don't think what Endgame did was a surprise.
No.
I mean, now, did anybody necessarily know that it was going to become the all-time box office champ? No, but I'm not surprised that it did. I wouldn't have predicted it. You know, obviously I would have predicted it to do insanely well, but I wouldn't have predicted that. But I'm not stunned that that happened.
Dude, at the beginning of 2019, we both were guests on another podcast, and that question came up, like, do you think that Star Wars, there's going to be between Star Wars and Avengers, which one did we think it was going to go to? I remember seeing it. I was like, I hate to say this because I'm a diehard Star Wars fan, but I think Avengers is totally going to kill it.
And I agreed. And I believed that overall, but I still didn't necessarily, I wouldn't have said, oh, it's going to become the all-time box office king.
Just to overtake Avatar, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. I mean, I would have expected, you know, I mean, if you would have told me $2 billion worldwide, I would have been like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
But, you know, but again, I'm not stunned by the fact that it did it. So I wouldn't necessarily chalk it up as a surprise. And same with Spider-Man Far From Home. Like, we both thought this was going to be the first billion-dollar Spider-Man movie, just coming off the goodwill from Homecoming and the fact that he was so good and so well-received in the two you know, Avengers.
Well, and then, movies. It's the follow-up to to Endgame.
Absolutely.
Right?
I think everything lined up for that to make sense. Yeah. So we weren't at all surprised by that. So, yeah, I don't really know that there
I'll tell you what, though, Captain Marvel's shocked the hell out of me. I know that we're not talking about that she's on a summer film, but her success.
Well, that completely floored me. Yeah, I actually had thought that the marketing on that wasn't good at all. And, that completely caught me off guard. But sticking with the summer stuff, I mean, I think Aladdin probably a surprise.
A little. Yeah.
You know?
It was from...
Yeah.
Because I wanted to poo-poo all over that film.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's hard to be, you know, you say, you know, I'm not often surprised by Disney and what their movies do, but that one surprised me, especially knowing that, like, Toy Story 4 and The Lion King, these movies were all kind of coming out close together.
Yeah.
The fact that all three of them are going to get to $1 billion is kind of ridiculous. Or two of them are already over $1 billion. But
it's something else. It also speaks to the power. I mean the power of the mouse, right? That's one thing, but the ability to attract mainstream audiences on a family level, I'd say, is a pretty big.
Sure.
That's a pretty big deal, right? You know, you're not just getting like a couple; you're getting like the grandmother and grandfather. You know, I think that's ultimately the play. It's like a big family thing for everybody.
And speaking of Disney, Disney's been in the news a little bit the last couple of days.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Big deal. So a couple of things. So Disney had their earnings report on August 6th. And while we did talk a little bit about that last week, because it was in reference to the bundling of Hulu Plus – I'm sorry – Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus. There was apparently an epic smackdown to the acquisition of Fox and the performance of Fox movies, or 20th Century Fox movies, and those sort of having an impact on the sort of quarterly results of Disney overall. I mean, there are some other things that are to play there, but you know, we did talk a little bit about the Dark Phoenix and its sort of epic failure and how it was a surprise to us. But
$170 million write-off for that movie.
Yeah. So Bob Iger is pretty much pointing his finger at everyone involved at 20th Century Fox, telling them to kind of shape up. He is doing some internal organizational changes to kind of shore up that investment, which means that there will likely be some folks to lose their jobs, which is very unfortunate. But there's just a lot more to chew on here in regards to how they are planning on getting Fox to fit into their grand plan, right? Sure. What Disney is sort of doing. And, you know, we've got the film thing, you know, the film piece on one side, but this streaming services and everything that they're throwing in ball, you know, they're throwing at this is actually a very, very, very big big and important play for the brand overall and for the company.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of interesting stuff happening. What's your take on all of it, Chris?
Well, so there were two interesting things that came out of this. And one, and this is something we didn't talk about last week, and it was one of those things that came out where, you know, Disney did very subtly throw in there that they're planning on continuing the Planet of the Apes franchise, which I think was very surprising to a lot of people. Yeah. Now, I'm a huge fan of that last trilogy. You know, we've spoken about it before. I think it's amazing stuff. And the fact that the movies made $1.6+ billion at the worldwide box office tells you that, well, obviously, you know, they're going to look to cherry pick the stuff that worked, right, for Fox.
Right.
So that was, to me, that was kind of exciting news because there's still a lot of time in between the time that War for the Planet of the Apes ends and the time that Charlton Heston lands on the Planet of the Apes that they could, you know, where they have stories to tell. So I'm interested to see where they go with that. But one thing that I think is interesting, and I don't know if I'd say it's hypocritical, but I do find it interesting that, you know, Bob Iger's going off on Fox, right, and their awful performance this year, which is, it's been dreadful, right?
Right.
Don't get me wrong. But, you know, he's talking about, you know, we're getting rid of a lot of their slate and you guys get a bit better get your act together. But then when, like, they're talking about movies like Deadpool, right, which were successful for Fox, it's like they're treating them like, oh, well, these are Marvel characters.
Right.
It's like, well, no. Well, yes, they are, but those were like Deadpool is a Fox property too. So you can't like completely, you know, go off on the failures if you're going to take credit for the successes, or you know what I mean? Like you're telling us you're going to keep the Planet of the Apes franchise going. You're telling us you're going to figure out ways to get Deadpool into the, you know, MCU and all that stuff. But it's MCU. Like, well, Fox did that. Fox created those successful franchises. So, you know, I don't think it's 100% fair, despite the fact that they've been an epic failure this year, to act like they never made, like, a good movie.
Ever. Yeah, no.
Which
that's,
is
I mean, that's
almost the way, like, it's being. Yeah. So, as far as, like, the stuff with, like, Deadpool and trying to figure out, like, where he fits, I've seen a lot of people already, like, overreact and saying how, oh, they're going to make Deadpool PG-13, which they never said, right? They did say they're struggling to try to figure out how it all fits and, like, how can they fit him in as, like, an Avenger but still continue, like, the franchise as an R-rated franchise and all that stuff? And or maybe do they even want to make him part of the MCU? I mean, you know, they don't have to, right?
No.
I mean, you know,
no, I don't. I mean, there's so many cool ways to do that with Deadpool. I mean, because he breaks the fourth wall.
Yes.
Because there's some
almost
fun ways to do it.
Yeah. I mean, because was he ever really part of the X-Men franchise? I mean, I know we've talked about this before with you with the continuity, but it's like,
oh, God, the hives are coming back, bro.
Yeah. I mean, he was always sort of maybe a part of that.
Yeah.
Somewhat. So, like, they could do something like that. Or, you know, I've seen even people suggest that maybe, like, Deadpool and Blade will be part of, like, an R-rated Marvel Knights imprint, you know, and that'll be, you know, those will be two nice properties to, if they are going to do something like that, to kick off a, you know, a more adult oriented, you know, product.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you listen, could you do that with Deadpool and still figure out a way to incorporate him into, like, you know, the proper MCU? You probably could.
Yeah. I mean, you know what would be really cool is in this Doctor Strange Madness of the Multiverse.
Yeah.
That's how they intro him. Some like kind of throwaway thing where like similar to the way that they've been doing it with Howard the Duck, you know, like they're zooming around or whatever like that, and he kind of pops up, which gets people super excited. So it technically fits him into the MCU because it's happening through a Doctor Strange movie, but then you know you keep him as a separate, it's a separate universe that kind of does its own thing, on its own.
Yeah,
I think you know they've never really. They have connected him to the X-Men franchise, but that X-Men franchise was very different. I wouldn't even say it was the new class, like the McAvoy group, even though they do pop up, because like the Colossus is different and there's so many different, you know what I mean, like the characters are all
different. It was all very loosely connected. That's why I say, like, I don't know why it's like, it's not like we haven't seen this before,
right?
We have. Now it's get it, Marvel Studios they're more organized when it comes to that stuff. So it's a little different. I mean, Fox clearly, when it came to continuity with the X-Men franchise, didn't necessarily have an attention to detail. Right. Whereas with Marvel, it's one unified thing. So it's, you know, there's a more of a focus on that. I get it.
Sure.
But with all of these acquisitions, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't want to take full advantage of what you have now. And you know, stay true to, I mean, we've talked about this, right, when we've talked about the way DC is going now with their properties, where it's like, we're going to make movies that fit the characters and just focus on making really good movies that are true to the characters, regardless of, you know, how they may differ and how I think that's the absolute correct approach. Well, there's no reason why Marvel can't do something similar to that now that they have all of these characters.
You know, it's a shame that we didn't, you know, that we're kind of looking at the next couple of years as they shore up phase four, and there was nothing really on Deadpool. Everyone was so focused on X-Men and the Fantastic Four, they all forgot about Deadpool, which by and large is a very, very successful franchise, two very successful films. So I as I think about this, I'm like, I'm not sure why they wouldn't want to fast track another Deadpool film. But I think it's probably to your point, because they're so organized, they're trying to really figure out a way to merge him in, when I think he just works best on his own.
Yeah. Maybe they're not. I mean, they haven't actually. I mean, yeah, there were a couple of comments here and there. There have been comments from people talking about how, you know, we don't have a problem making R-rated films, and we don't have a problem. But there's never been like a formal idea of like, we have no idea how they plan to, other than knowing that mutants are going to be a thing, right?
Right.
Just Feige's statement. We don't really know exactly how they plan on handling these new characters that they've acquired.
Right.
The assumption is that they're going to be brought into the MCU at some point. But, you know, at the same time, you know, if, say, Blade winds up being like an R-rated thing on a Marvel Knights imprint or something like that, then is that going to be MCU? Or is this going to be kind of like another, like, not quite like a Netflix thing, but in the sense of, it's like, are we going to be figuring out where these characters fit? Because they're probably not going to have, they're not going to interact much if that's the way they're going to do it, right?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, and then it comes down to the delineation between PG-13 and rated R, which really is just a couple of curse words and some blood and guts, right? So,
although it does make a big difference, though, as far as your audience, right? Your target audience.
Yes. No. 100%. And where I was going is that, you know, some of these films that we've seen that were MCU films, like Civil War and other films. By and large, if you had inserted blood or, like, you know, all of that, probably would have been rated R. I mean, Falcon shoots people, and Captain America is basically, like, you know, crushing people into walls and things like that. Funny plug, like the guys from the Corridor Crew, it's the guys that kind of comment on bad VFX in movies. They did a whole, like, if we were to punch up a Marvel film, and they pick Civil War and they turned it into a rated R film. It's actually quite funny. Really recommend you guys check it out. It's really good. But yeah, that's kind of what it would be like. It's just like blood and guts, and, you know, again, a couple of curse words. But that, you know, by going that route, you do run the risk of alienating a particular subset of your audience, which has gotten very comfortable.
Sure.
11 years comfortable with, right, you know, these Marvel films.
And the fact is, like, and I didn't see the PG-13 Deadpool 2, the Christmas, right, thing that they did. So I don't really know how much different it was. But, like, even if you made a Deadpool 2, like you said, the line between PG-13 and R is not, it's very fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you did make a couple of adjustments to like a Deadpool series to fit it into Marvel, it's still going to be very different, right,
mm-hmm,
than anything else that Marvel Studios has done, as, yeah, far as in this modern age. I mean, you, sure, know, there was a Marvel Studios that was responsible for the Man-Thing TV movie that is a horror movie, essentially. So, like, there's those early days of Marvel Studios where it wasn't all what we know now, right? They were also responsible for, even though it's not considered like Marvel Studios, Marvel Studios was a thing when Punisher Warzone was made. That movie was over the top and violent as, yep, you know, any superhero movie, whatever you're ever going to see. So, I mean, it's not like they've never done anything like this before. I mean, yes, granted, that was before Disney. I get it.
Right.
But still. I mean, Marvel Studios has a lot of clout. I mean, Kevin Feige reports directly to the head of Disney.
Right.
You know, so I mean, I'm pretty sure that, you know, I'm pretty sure that Marvel has a lot of, you know, push here. And, I, you know, I don't know. I guess, I mean, look, we're going to wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, do they have to rush to get another Deadpool movie made?
No, but I mean it's, you know, it's an ace in the hole. It's, yeah, you know, the one thing that probably has come out of this thing, this merger, unscathed. Unfortunately, you know, the X-Men is in dire need of a reboot given, sure, how this last movie ended. But, you know, Deadpool, for all intents and purposes, ended on a really high note.
Yeah.
And you know, I think Ryan Reynolds for sure is a beloved person to play the role. I think you know, Marvel should feel comfortable with all of the pieces that they've acquired for that film. I would love to see it, like, again, I'd love to see it live in its own thing, and he's kind of making commentary. You know, he's able to reference, you know, the Avengers and some of the things that are happening in the MCU, but he, you know, because he's breaking the fourth wall, but he stays quite separate from all of that.
Yeah.
So.
You know, and I mean, we'll see. I mean, we know it's not going to be part. None of this is part of Phase 4 anyway, right? So
no.
Until they start releasing their Phase 5 plans, that's when I think we're going to start hearing about anything relating to X-Men and obviously Fantastic Four and all of that stuff. But, you right. know, I'm pretty
but that's
sure.
that's like 2022.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So it's like we're going to 4+ years of waiting. Yeah.
They'll figure it out in that time, I think.
Or Deadpool.
Yeah. Or unless, I mean, look, maybe we'll find out that they're going to, you know, they are going to create this side thing, like a Marvel yeah. Knights thing and have some of the characters exist there, which that's what I would prefer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, rather, a character like Blade.
Yeah, I would rather have the movies be truer to the characters and not have to be kind of watered down or sanitized a little bit. You know, that was one of the cool things about, like, when Daredevil first came out on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
You know, or Punisher and things like that. Because, you know, if you're telling me we're never going to get, like, these R-rated type things, and that means we're never going to get, like, a Punisher ever again.
Right.
On the screen.
Or a real Blade, really. But we know right. that they're investing in that character. So,
yeah.
you know, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Blade, in my opinion, doesn't really work as a PG-13 character.
No, I mean, you could do it, but it's not going to be as exciting. Yeah, it's just not going
to. I mean, it's like Live Free or Die Hard.
Exactly.
It's just not going to work. You know what I'm saying? It's like taking Rambo and going, dude, you're going to be PG-13 now.
Right.
It's just not going
to
happen.
Just to do it.
Yeah.
You know, just to expand your quote-unquote audience. But you're doing that at the expense of not being completely true to the character.
Right, right.
And are really kids going to be flocking to, like, a Blade movie? Probably not anyway. So why not give it the Deadpool treatment and make it fit, you know, to the... And one of the things, the great thing about Deadpool was that it was so true to the character.
Yeah.
And that's what I think attracted people. And it found a big audience, regardless of the fact that it was R-rated.
Right. So, I mean, it's the same thing with Logan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing with Logan.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we're thinking about this, as we're kind of talking through it, I'd maybe kind of want all of the X-Men to be separate. Like, I know that's never going to happen because they're going to really want to link, you know, these guys up.
Oh, you mean
up,
to have, like, the X-Men be its own property, like its own universe separate on the side?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we kind of saw that already, but, I mean, I do...
Yeah.
I mean, as somebody who, again, was never like a big Marvel fan, growing up as a kid, aside from Spider-Man, like as I got older and started to see, like, you know, the idea of like Spider-Man hanging out with the X-Men is kind of cool. Like that was one of the few things that I actually...
That's the thing. I mean, everyone is in New York, right?
Right.
So it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of the few things I found it cool about Marvel, even though I wasn't really reading it much, was like that, you know, the Punisher existed in Spider-Man's world and like all that stuff. And it's like those characters were so different. And, you know, I don't necessarily know how that works on film. It probably doesn't. But like, yeah, I don't know that I necessarily need the X-Men to be separate. But I would think some of the characters, it would be nice if they could just make them just very, very true to themselves.
Because... Telling you, Black Panther 2, you got Captain Marvel. They're going to be... I think they're going to be using a lot of the current characters to start inserting some mutants in there.
Well, you would think, right? I mean, why would
it be so smart to do it? Just drop Storm in Black Panther 2. Yeah. Smart. It's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige.
And shockingly, and I don't know why this came as this was news today, apparently, that Marvel is not thrilled with new mutants. Well, why? Who expected them to be? Do people want to see New Mutants still? Like, I mean, yeah, of course they're unimpressed with it. Because that's why even Fox was unimpressed with it. That's why they kept pushing it back.
I know. Dude, here's the thing. Lock it up. Don't release it theatrically. Drop it on Disney Plus.
Absolutely.
This is the best. I mean, it's a win-win for everybody.
Yes.
Just do it that way.
Speaking of.
Yes.
So Disney Plus, I know we talked last week about how now Disney Plus is going to be part of a bundle with ESPN Plus and Hulu for $12.99 a month, which is an insane price. November 12th.
Oh, and it's Hulu Live TV.
Well, no.
That got cleared up. Isn't
what's
it?
That? No. So Hulu Live TV is an option still, but what you're getting for $12.99 a month is Hulu ad-supported version, which is the current plan that's... The less expensive plan. It's ESPN Plus and Disney Plus. That's the $12.99. Hulu with live TV, I think, is almost $50 or something like that a month. That's an add-on. And if you wanted Hulu without the ads, that alone is like $12 a month, I think.
Yep.
But, you know, we talked about how that's a big deal and all this stuff. And it is, surely. Because especially when that's the same price as Marvel as Netflix's top service, right? Top price.
Yeah.
So this became like big news today, because was it the Hollywood Reporter or Variety who had that story?
Yeah, it was Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, Hollywood Reporter did an article about how, you know, analysts are seeing that they believe that Disney Plus is going to wind up, if they are going to target Netflix, which they clearly are, that they're going to wind up winning this war. Although, at what expense was the story that you sent me? And I read through it, and the general gist of it was that you know, Disney's putting so much now into Disney Plus and their streaming services that it's going to help accelerate cord cutting, which is going to hurt their negotiations with, you know, cable and satellite providers for their actual network content.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a whole lot of nothing. I think, listen,
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. We've been talking about this for a while. Streaming is one of my favorite things to talk about. Cord cutting. I've been a cord cutter for over 3 years. It's something that I did a lot of research for when I made the decision, because I was one of those people who was addicted to the amount of channels that I had for a while, mm-hmm. until I actually sat down and paid attention to what I actually watched. So I was one of those people. So I did a lot of research before I cut the cord, and I could see this coming. So I've been following a lot of these stories and things like 5G and things like content provider direct streaming services and stuff. And we all know that this has been the future of television for a while, and it's here now. And Disney should be putting all of their efforts into this. You know, something like, you know, it's funny. You think of ESPN, right? So ESPN is one of the primary reasons why people cut the cord. Mm-hmm. Not literally ESPN, but the idea of ESPN. So ESPN, I think Disney gets on average like $6.50 per subscriber for ESPN. It's like the most expensive, you know, network when it comes to the per subscriber amount that Disney mm-hmm. gets, that anybody can get for their networks. And that's what drives up your cable bill, right? And there's a lot of people that don't actually watch ESPN, but you have to pay for it anyway.
Right.
ESPN has lost a lot of actual quote unquote subscribers because people have been cutting out the tiers that have it, or they've been cutting the cord completely. They've been hurt a lot by cord cutting. So right. It's like, obviously Disney knows this, mm-hmm. you know, they know. And so this is a piece here that I took from the article that pretty much says it all as far as why is Disney doing this? Why is Disney potentially cannibalizing their actual networks to focus so much on streaming? And it's right in the article. It says that the media networks that Disney has is right now their largest business, but it's forecast to grow just 14% over the next 5 years as cord cutting takes its toll, right?
Right.
In the same 5 years, Disney's smallest segment, which is direct to consumer and international, which would be what Disney Plus would be a part of, right? That's expected to surge 140% by 2024. So by 2024, which is only, you know, less than 5 years away at this point, the amount of revenue they're getting from their direct-to-consumer stuff is almost going to be on par with what they're expected to get from their media networks.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously 5 years from that point, it's going to be even more than that. Because, again, this is the right. future of television. And they know it. And Netflix knows it. I mean, again, there's a reason why Netflix, which is by far the biggest of all the streaming services, has 151 million subscribers worldwide, okay? Just as a comparison, Hulu has 28 million.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime has 100 million, but they don't actually break down how many of those are video subscribers and how many of those are just like, because that's just
like their regular Prime people.
Yeah, that's their Prime people, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So 151, and they're hemorrhaging money, Netflix, and they're hemorrhaging money despite being that big because they have spent so much money on original content because they knew this day was coming. They knew mm-hmm. there was going to be a day when they weren't going to have access to a lot of original content, either because the content providers were going to provide it directly themselves, right? Which we're seeing with Disney Plus, right? Took off mm-hmm. all of their content right from Netflix. Disney started to slowly yep. take off their content yeah. from Netflix because they were releasing their own service. Or they were going to be competing with other streaming services for the rights to that legacy programming, like what we're seeing now with HBO Max outbidding Netflix for Friends.
Right.
We've seen HBO Max now outbid Amazon Prime for the BBC stuff like Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're starting.
Well, it's even in the Disney Plus. Well, Disney acquisition of Fox, and now they've got all the episodes of The Simpsons.
Yes,
it's exactly. Like they're all finding their anchor series.
Absolutely, and now you know, you couple that with the fact that the other news today that broke, which was that CBS and Viacom are finally going to merge, making one giant company, Viacom CBS, which is now going to not. And there's big ramifications for Star Trek with this. Mm-hmm. So if you're a big Star Trek fan like I am, this is amazing news, because finally the Star Trek movie properties and TV properties are going to be all under one roof now,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be fantastic. But also, you know, CBS Viacom CBS, whatever it's called, they now, like for CBS All Access, they get access now to those Viacom networks, like, and Paramount Pictures stuff and Comedy yep. Central stuff and all of that stuff, which they can yep. fold into CBS All Access. And, you know, there's a CBS All Access Showtime bundle for $15 a month. So, like, all of a sudden, like, well, Showtime and CBS All Access and CBS Television and now this Viacom, their networks and Paramount Pictures, all of that stuff could potentially be under one, and that could be its own monster streaming service.
Yep.
So here we go. So NBC, we know, has one coming. CBS has one, and that's now expanding.
Yeah.
Warner Media, AT&T, whatever, they're going to have theirs with HBO Max. And Disney has theirs with Disney Plus, and it's like that pretty much covers everybody.
Yeah, Apple.
Well, and Apple, but Apple's not a content provider necessarily.
No, like they're not. I mean, they are starting to create their own. They will be creating their own stuff, but they it's will not be. Like.
Correct. And, but I'm saying, I mean, like,
they're going to be the only ones that will likely. It's funny because they're going to go the way of the cable companies, essentially, in a way, because they'll right. have to pay for licenses to certain content, yes. right?
And, I mean, Disney Plus is going to be. You know, he now has access to, like, the FX network stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so basically, if you look at it, so your major broadcast networks, right? CBS, well, they're going to have their own streaming service. Well, they do mm-hmm. already, but it's going to be growing even more, you would think. NBC, they're going to have one. ABC, which obviously is part of Disney, yep. right? So that's a thing. And then you have Fox.
Well, Fox still part of Disney.
Which is still, well, no, but the Fox sort of. Broadcast isn't part of that deal. So right, that's right, still right. separate. But in theory, like even the FX stuff and all that stuff, the cable side. Yeah, that stuff's going to be part of the Disney service. So, yeah, I mean, and you know, with Hulu being a thing, I mean, you're really, here we are. Like, you're basically, there's your TV.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's scary because, well, not scary. I mean, it's intriguing and fascinating because of all of the players in the game, Disney will position itself as one of the largest because it has majority share of Hulu. All right, so it essentially has two. It'll have two streaming services,
and which right? they're already using taking advantage of.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, here you go. And then, you know, oh, and by the way, Netflix is still a thing. And
yeah, right.
You know, and
Prime.
Yeah, and Amazon Prime is still a thing, and they have original programming and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, this is, there you go. There's your TV. And now it's a matter of seeing how many things that they can acquire. And I mean, CBS Viacom has already talked about how they're looking into acquisitions and whatnot, because eventually it's all going to be consolidated, and you'll have a handful of streaming services that'll provide most of your quote-unquote broadcast TV and TV content, and then you'll get to cherry-pick your fringe stuff, right?
Right.
Also part of the Viacom deal was, is, you know, Viacom owns Pluto TV.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if you're familiar with Pluto TV, but Pluto TV is a free streaming service. It's available on Roku. It's available on your, you know, like your phone and web browser. It's basically like, it gives you the feel of live television. Like, it's got an interactive guide, and it's got, you know, networks that just run content like 24/7. Some of it's specialized, and, you know, like, so there's, like, right now they've been running like an all Doctor Who channel, for instance, with all classic Doctor Who stuff. But now, as part, and they've had movie channels and like some sports channels and stuff, but like, now because of the Viacom ownership, like, there's dedicated channels for like MTV programming and for mm-hmm. Paramount Network programming and stuff like that, and Nickelodeon programming. So, like, that's now crazy. A part of this deal, too. And they're like putting MTV. Money into original content, Pluto TV. So, like, I mean, this stuff is so huge for people, and I think that the customer is going to wind up winning this one, which is nice,
because
you're going to have a lot of great access to a lot of great content and more flexibility than you had, and a lot of stuff that's, you know, bundled together. And I mean, look, that Disney Hulu ESPN thing is going to be one of the huge stories in media for the next few years because of what it is triggering. And I think the ripple effects of that deal, November 12th, it debuts.
I was going to say, it's like 3 months away.
Yeah. And they're expecting the numbers to be gigantic, as far as, cause there's 28 million Hulu subscribers, and, obviously Disney Plus doesn't have any yet. And, there's a few million ESPN Plus subscribers. So yeah, I'm going to get it.
Yeah, same here.
I mean, I currently pay for the ad-free Hulu because I watch a lot of Hulu.
Yep,
but same. I'll actually be willing to give up that to pay the same price almost, or a dollar more, to get Disney Plus and ESPN Plus.
Well, I mean, I like my ad-free stuff, so we'll see. Only I'll pay the extra bit of money, but we'll see how much it all shapes up to be. And I'm sure, you know, with D23 on the horizon, you know, rolling out August 23rd, there might be some additional news to roll out to come out with Disney Plus.
Right.
So we'll see. And maybe they'll talk about pre-orders or whatever it'll look like. But I'm excited, man. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. All right, cool. So we kind of hit all of those streaming things and one swoop.
Yeah, well, it winds up becoming one giant story, right?
I mean, it really is, man. It's gosh, I mean, seriously, the next couple of months they're going to be super, super interesting. And as I've said, I've got some serious decisions to make. I mean, this whole Viacom CBS thing just sweetened the pot even more for me. I mean, Picard was a big thing for me, and I want to get involved in that. I want to jump on that, but. Yep. The possibilities of additional content that could be coming out based on this merger, you know, everything from, you know, as we talked, MTV, Transformers, Mission Impossible, all these things that are connected to Viacom and Paramount, is super interesting and just it's going to be awesome. So.
Yeah, and again, if you're a Star Trek fan, it's a good day right now. And whether I don't care if you're a fan of the Kelvin timeline or not, I mean, I'm one of those. I know there are some hardcore Star Trek fans that hate the Kelvin timeline stuff from the movies, but I'm not one of them. I still say I love Star Trek 2009. I think it's one of the perfect examples of how to take a franchise and bring it in for a new generation and modernize it and give it a fresh coat of paint and just make it exciting. I love that movie. I love it a lot. Star Trek Into Darkness, I've always said I love it, and I love how Star Trek it is until the last act, really the last 20 minutes or so, like when they start to do the remake of Wrath of Khan, not as much. But the stuff with Peter Weller, like the stuff before that, that movie becomes underrated because people forget that I think it's good up until like the very end.
Yeah, I agree.
And Star Trek Beyond was so Star Trek. I mean, that was really just like an episode. It was the closest thing that we would get at the time to what an episode of Star Trek would have been like if, like, that was the cast.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean? Like, if that cast had gotten a weekly show, like, that's basically what that movie was to me anyway.
I caught that on a plane ride. Yeah. It was actually a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. It's just entertaining, and I like that. So I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, no, keep them set, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
Just it's great, though, to have everything together, and now, you know, you don't have to worry about the fact that we might actually get another Star Trek movie has just increased, you know, with whatever that winds up being anyway. But the fact that it's going to most likely now, it's more likely to be a thing is exciting. So.
Yeah, I mean, going back to year 2009 Star Trek, I mean, that whole timeline thing messed me up in the brain, and I thought it was, like, brilliant.
Yeah.
To see Leonard Nimoy pop up, I'm like, what?
Star Trek has always been made for television, right? And it's always been better as a television series than in the movies. But the best Star Trek movies have been, like The Wrath of Khan, and I love The Voyage Home and Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Star Trek First Contact is
that's a great
by far
one.
The best of the generation. It was probably my favorite actual Star Trek movie, theatrical movie. But anyway, they've been able to harness like the feel of Star Trek, but increase the action.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I liked about, like, especially like 2009. Like it, because, you know, you're not going to be able to get away with, like, you take a movie like Star Trek Insurrection, which I like more than a lot of people do. Star Trek Insurrection is just an extra long episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Right.
And it didn't work for a lot of people because of that. Like, you really had to be a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation. Like, you didn't have to necessarily be a fan to love First Contact.
Right.
But for Insurrection, yeah, you really needed to
that
be a
was
fan.
The Tom Hardy one, right?
No, like, that's Nemesis. Plays... That's the last one. That was where he's a Nemesis. Clone of Picard. That
right. Okay. Yeah.
No, Insurrection's the one with the Baku and the Sanaa, where with F. Murray Abraham, where he's like the anti-aging stuff, where they stretch the skin and whatnot, and they have that civilization that's, you know, real peaceful and stuff. Yeah, that one. But it's like a really just a long episode of The Next Generation. It more so than a movie. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we're gonna get another, like I said, the fact that we're more likely to get another Star Trek movie now because of this is exciting. So yeah, plenty of exciting stuff coming down the pipe. A lot of this week is there's been a lot of big news coming out this week that's going to have, I think, very, very long-term ramifications on the stuff that we love. So
yeah, cool. Chris, I have been watching The Boys.
Oh yes,
I am 5 episodes in, I think. Dude, oh, so good. And like, actually, makes my stomach flip a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, it kind of puts me on edge, which I didn't expect. I think it's maybe because of the world that we live in now where, you know, you expect to see superheroes do super heroic things and they don't do any of that. And, like the no spoilers, but there's a plane hijacking that flipped my stomach. It made me so uncomfortable. But it was brilliant. It was great. So I know Chris talked about this maybe for 2 episodes. I am on track. I should finish it this week. But definitely for those of you guys who are listening and you have not seen The Boys, go see it. Because it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a great, great show.
The amazing thing about it is, so I've spoken to some people who are not comic book readers, and they've watched it and absolutely loved it.
Mm.
So, and I know people that are hardcore comic book readers I've yet to meet anyone who hasn't loved it.
Yeah.
Whether they're comic book fans or not, whether they're people that are familiar with the story or not, which then that tells you something.
Yeah. It's dope. And it's actually... I was reading something like it's on IMDb's like number one. I think it's like IMDb's number one rated like TV show right now or something like that. It's highest rated, which is great. The one thing that bothers me and I'm just going to get into my nitpicky and then we can move on. I don't like when shows say that they're set in New York and I can clearly tell that they're not. That just bothers the hell out of me. And it's because I'm a New Yorker. So
what I want
minor thing.
What I want you to do, okay, is I want you to watch Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh, dude, I know Jason.
And tell me when you see mountains in the background in New York City, how that worked for you.
Yeah, yeah, rooftops and head punching and all that.
Well,
yeah.
Forget the head. I mean, that aside, I mean, you can go this a lot about that movie, but the fact that there's mountains and because it's shot in Vancouver. There's mountains in Manhattan in the background.
I cannot stand stuff like that. There was one time the boys caught me off guard where they're supposedly in Times Square and it was just a common city street. But when they pan up, they kind of go to the CG Times Square and they do a really good job at integrating like iconic right. you know, buildings and things like that into like the sort of panoramic views. But yeah, I can totally tell.
I mean, it is a streaming show, although the effects are surprisingly really good.
They're great.
Yeah.
They're amazing. And I think, you know, what actually is bothering me too, is that, so Homelander is a Superman-esque character and he's so, bad that I don't want to see Brightburn. You've heard of Brightburn. Right?
Yep.
Like, I want to see Brightburn, but like, I'm like, oh, that's just Homelander. Like, but it's so good. And the acting is great. The fact that that's Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan's kid, who is like the lead in this, is mind boggling to me because he looks like both of his parents.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, it's funny. I know we talked a little bit about Stranger Things last week, but talking about generational actors, you know, Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's daughter is in Stranger Things season 3, plays a significant role. And it was funny because I'm watching the first episodes and I'm like, man, that girl really looks like Uma Thurman. Like, she kind of sounds like her too. And my wife is like, no, what are you talking about? You're like, well, like, no way, no way. And I was like, there's something about that girl. Like, I don't know. And then I find out it's their love child. Pretty cool. She sounds just like her mom.
Yes.
It's creepy. Anyways, not to derail the show.
Right.
But well, what else we got?
Not much. I mean, we just had a wrestling question from Tavo. He said, if we saw it, what was your opinion of Bray Wyatt's new character, The Fiend? For him, it was a hell of an entrance. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably haven't seen this.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Huh? What?
Exactly.
No.
So I actually am a big fan of this character. I think it's great. I think it's one of the better things that they've done recently. They haven't done a lot that I've liked, but this one I think is a home run. I like how it's a reinvention of a character that was cool in the very beginning and then kind of got a little long in the tooth. It's freaky. It's creepy. I think it's getting buzz, which is good. That's what you want. He actually has gotten himself into much better shape, which is also cool. I'm a big fan of this. I think it's been great so far. And I think the fact that the crowd has responded to it tells you just how desperate they are for anything new, anything fresh and new, even if it's, you know, a fresh coat of paint on an existing character, like just something that seems fresh and new. So, yeah, love it. Love the entrance. Love the gimmick. Love just everything so far.
Yeah. Did they take Bray Wyatt off for a while?
And now he's back. He's in good shape. And he's got a freaky mask on and he's called the Fiend and he carries a head of Bray Wyatt to the ring and it's cool. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Like what, like, was he injured? What happened to this guy?
Yeah. A few things, but yeah, both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of quickly looking at pictures of him, he definitely dropped significant weight.
Yes.
Looking good. I was actually a Bray Wyatt fan.
Yeah, I mean, the act was great when it was in NXT, and then when it came to the main roster, like, it was cool in the very beginning.
People loved him.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. And then it got a little, it got stale, like, a lot of things do.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But everyone loved their, you know, lights go out.
Sure.
Type thing. Everyone's got their cell phone cameras going. They're the lights. He had good music too.
Yeah, and I'm actually glad that they didn't. And I don't know if it was ever their plan or if they changed it or whatever. But I'm glad that the whole the Firefly Funhouse thing, where he was like a children's entertainer, I'm glad that didn't become like a permanent gimmick. and it was transitioned into this, because this is much better. Without question. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I guess on that note, we can get on out of here.
All right. Let's do the plugs.
Some plugs. So, of course, thefanboygarage.com. That's where you want to go to buy some merch and check out our episodes and send us an email if you're not onto the social medias. Of course, if you are on social media, we want you to join in the conversation. You can tweet us at the Fanboy Garage on Twitter. You can go to our Instagram page, also at the Fanboy Garage. And of course, you can like our Facebook page, the Fanboy Garage Facebook page, where we have a couple of groups there, where we have conversation there as well. Of course, you could find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me at Starting Sith. Thank you so much for listening to the 58th episode of the Fanboy Garage, and we'll get out of here. Thanks so much.